Back together again, you and I chatting it up. New week, new month on Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I started the show talking about the dearth of reaction from prominent Democrats to another deadly weekend in Chicago. CBS News reporter Linda Kenyon joined us from the White House to talk about the possibility of using National Guard troops in another U.S. city. Connecticut Mirror reporter Mark Pasniokas detailed his piece on the lasting effects of that COVID-19 relief money that flowed into Connecticut for years. And Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio looked at some of the numbers on just how efficient state lawmakers use their limited time in the General Assembly.
And we find out once again, right off the hopper here in a new month, what a bunch of phonies the Democratic Party is on every level, local, state, and national, when it comes to guns and gun violence. Yeah, they are nothing but phonies. Top and bottom. Why am I saying this? Well, last week, of course, everybody was outraged and saddened that you had two kids killed, another 14 kids injured, another three adults injured at that horrific shooting by a nut, a whack job, a transgender nut in Minneapolis, not a law-abiding gun owner, not a law-abiding NRA member, whatever. That whack job kills two people, injures 17 others. They talked about it for about a day, and that was it. And it gave everybody, including Chris Murphy, including Dick Blumenthal, the finger wagging and guns and guns. But, folks, what did I tell you last week? I talked about this on Wednesday and Thursday, knowing I was off Friday. I gave you your homework assignment. Did you do it? I did. As soon as I settled in here behind the big control console here at Connoisseur Media, all I did was I typed in one word or two words, Chicago shootings. And there came right there the great God Google. Like a shade dropping from the top of the window to the bottom. Vroom, boom. There's all the stories here. Labor Day weekend brings violence to Chicago. Nearly 60 people shot, 8 people killed through Monday. Where's Dick Blumenthal on this? Where's our friend Chris Murphy on this? Are they going to say anything about this? Where are the usual blowhards in Congress about this, worrying about gun violence? Is gun violence horrible? Of course it is. I've had someone killed in gun violence. To this day, there's an ache in our family about that. Okay, so I know what that's like. Done by a criminal, of a criminal element back in 1978. So don't lecture me on, well, it's poverty, or, well, it's there's no jobs, there's no housing. Bull crap. A criminal is a criminal is a criminal. Not having something to eat shouldn't make you kill someone. I'm tired of hearing J.B. Pritzker and that moron mayor they have in Chicago, Brandon Johnson. This guy is incompetent with a capital I. Hearing him as a tool of the teachers union saying, well, part of it's affordable housing. Really, Mayor? You think somebody who has the volition and the ineptitude to shoot and kill somebody over being disrespected or some drug deal is cares about, oh, gee, I don't know if I can afford the rent there. Excuse me, honey, we got to figure this out. I'll get back to you as soon as I put a cap between this guy's eyes. Oh, come on. How dumb do they think we are? It was a violent Labor Day weekend around Chicago, says WGN-TV in Chicago. Nearly 60 people shot and killed through the Monday holiday. Now, perish the thought. This is an awful thought. But can you imagine if 60 kids were killed? From late Friday through Saturday and Sunday into early yesterday, as it should be reacted to with horror and disdain. Are we hearing anything today? Nope. This is one city. You know why? Because they don't want to say anything. Because sometimes it's got to be someone's fault. It's Trump's fault. It's the system's fault. It's the fault of oppression. It's the fault of this, that, and the other. No, it's the fault of people who don't think twice about killing someone. You want to get in a fight? Fine. You want to even break out a knife? Go ahead. You're going to kill somebody? And Trump's the problem? Stop. Stop insulting our intelligence here. The Chicago Police Department released its official holiday weekend crime stats this morning. 58 people were shot in 37 incidents across the city. 8 murders from 6 p.m. to Friday to 11 p.m., 11:59 p.m. Monday. Wow. Happy Labor Day. One line here, a couple of lines from the Chicago Police Union. The Chicago Fraternal Order of Police issued a statement over the weekend addressing the violence. Here's a quote. Yes, crime is down. The murderous mindset is not. Just like the numbers can explode. Until we have more cops, some federal help is welcome and appreciated. Yet you have a mayor in Chicago and a mayor in a lot of these big cities who will fall over themselves taking money, and instead of paying for law enforcement, for first responders, to the citizens of their cities, well, you know, we have to set this aside for migrants and illegals. And these idiots get elected. It is mind-numbing. It is mind-numbing. Well, you know, and now I'm seeing on CNN all day, and boy, there, because they know what's coming from the White House. No, they know. They know what's coming from the White House. It's going to be some sort of troop patrol or something sent to Chicago. They see what's happening already. Well, though, we see the down arrows. Oh, look, the little down arrows. There are fewer people killing themselves and fewer people getting shot. Yeah, that's great. That's like a Republican going up there and saying, well, yeah, there are some kids who were killed, but it's fewer kids than last year. You know how dumb that sounds. It should sound dumb on this side, too. Even with the drop in crime, that still translates to more than 1,200 people being shot and at least 274 murders, more than those in New York City and Los Angeles, two cities with much larger populations than Chicago. Please explain this to me. Honestly, I don't get it. I don't get it. Now, let me ask you something, too. If Donald Trump was not in the White House and it was President Barack Obama, let's say the time currents in our lives were shifted, and this is all going on with Barack Obama, a native of Chicago. Let's say that, okay? And supposing he said, hey, Mayor, all due respect, this is my home city here. I know people, I love people here. I'm sending in some federal forces, maybe some National Guard troops. You think Brandon Johnson's going to say no? Of course he's not. You think J.B. Pritzker would say no to Barack Obama? Well, Obama wouldn't do it, Paul. No, 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 no. Don't go on there with me. I'm saying, all things being equal, if we could reverse some sort of time continuum there and say, well, you know, President Obama wants to send in some National Guard troops or federal help or whatever, you think J.B. Pritzker is going to say no? You think Brandon Johnson's going to say no? Of course not. They'll kiss the ring, as they should. So is this just about Trump? If this was any other president, would J.B. Pritzker and that buffoon of a mayor, Brandon Johnson, would they kind of look at each other and say, well, we kind of have to here? You tell me. And I'll keep asking throughout the afternoon. And if you spot a statement they may have made, you let me know, and I'll be happy to read it and find some audio of it on the air. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I'm still waiting for the official statement from Dick Blumenthal and Chris Murphy on this Chicago violence. They haven't said anything yet. I wonder why. And see, this is why half the country is dug in on guns, and the other half of the country gets mad about that. Well, And I don't own a gun. I've never fired a live round of ammunition. But come on, you don't mean to tell me there's a double standard with gun violence in this country? Especially when everybody knew what was going to happen this weekend, as happens every weekend in Chicago. But nobody, no high-ranking Democrat in Congress, that includes Dick Blumenthal, that includes Chris Murphy, who usually go parading around the country when white suburban kids get shot, they aren't going to say a word. Because they don't want to dump any crap on Democratic-run states and cities and blue governors who they're friends with. I get it. I understand how it's played. But this is why you've got people dug in on guns now, because the governing bodies among us aren't consistent about it. And the bottom line is, and I'm sorry, I know this upsets somebody, some people, when I say this, I've been told this, I don't care. Do you understand? I don't care. Black and Hispanic people die in urban gun death every day, every night in this country, and the Democrats couldn't give any less of a crap if they tried. But yet you have, you know, situations like Chicago that have this, you know, Wild West every freaking weekend. And yet I find this, Illinois projected to spend $2.5 billion on migrants by the end of 2025, according to a new report. So how much of that money you think could have been used for, I don't know, anti-violence initiatives, crime-fighting initiatives, maybe, as the Chicago Police Union says, more police in the streets? No. Let's use that on migrants, healthcare, food, housing, while the taxpayers of Illinois and Chicago, many of them black and Hispanics who live in bad neighborhoods, they're upset. And they wag their finger at J.B. Pritzker, and they wag their finger at Brandon Johnson, and, oh, Trump, just keep saying Trump, that'll knock him off the trail. Trump, oh, my God. Good God. If you're a liberal out there, if you're a progressive, what's wrong with your side of the aisle when it comes to this? Honestly, I don't get it. You say, well, the NRA and Republicans, they don't care about kids getting shot, and you don't care about black people getting shot. Right? How can you say that, Paul? How can't I say it? Why wouldn't I say it? And this will happen every single weekend, and Trump will say something about J.B. Pritzker, and he'll be right. And he'll say something about Brandon Johnson, and he'll be right. And that incompetent mayor goes out there the other day to the insult of the victims of violent crime. He goes out there to the insult of these people and says, well, it's about housing. How dumb can you be? People kill each other because they don't have housing. Stop it. You can't be that dumb, Mayor. You can't. You did get elected. I know you're a tool of the teachers' unions. I get it. But my God. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And Chicago's been like this for years. So Trump says something about it, and he's the bad guy? This is Trump derangement syndrome, I swear. You know, I used to think TDS was a comedic thing. I really think it's real now. There is such an anger with Trump that people stop thinking. Now, you can still think and hate the guy. I understand it. But this is nuts. This is crazy. Can you imagine the national outrage if almost five dozen people were shot at a church or a school or a day camp? My God, perish the thought. If that was Newtown times two, well, it almost happened here in Chicago over the weekend. Eight people killed. You probably say, are you safer in Gaza than Chicago? I'm not sure. Don't laugh. I'm not saying that to be flip. But then again, I wouldn't know because I'm not getting any help on the subject from Richard Blumenthal or Chris Murphy. Maybe if I miss something, please let me know. Send me a link. I'd be happy to look at it and read it and say, good for you, Mr. Murphy. Good for you, Mr. Blumenthal. But of course not. Of course not, because we all know that's not going to happen. Busy afternoon at the White House. Always great to have Linda Kenyon here from CBS News. And Linda, I was watching some of this Trump presser a couple of minutes ago. A lot of stuff going on there today. And I guess, Linda, we have still questions about what would happen in Chicago here. What's up?
Yeah, the president was very forthright about that. You know, he's been saying he wants to send troops into Chicago and other Democratic-controlled cities, saying that the National Guard troops are necessary to wipe out crime. He claims that D.C. is now 100% crime-free after having sent in the National Guard, and they're here for about another 2 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. So, but today, just moments ago in the Oval Office, he was asked if he was going to send in troops to Chicago next, and he said, we're going in. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying when, but we're going in. Now, the governor of Illinois has been very vocal in pushing back against sending National Guard troops into his city.
Yep.
He posted earlier on social media today saying that there is no justification for sending in the National Guard and that basically he's not going to stand for it.
Interesting. And finally, Linda, I did have to chuckle here. I guess there was a rumor that Mr. Trump's health might not have been the best over the weekend, and he let loose with one of these, no, I am still here. Any idea where this whole thing came from or not?
Well, you know, as you are aware, President Trump is very visible in front of the cameras.
Yeah.
He does get what we like to call FaceTime. and when he doesn't for a few days, we start to wonder. And we hadn't seen him for 3 days. Now, Vice President Vance had been asked about 4 days ago if he was ready to step in should the president be has a health problem. And he said, I'm ready to step in on day one. But he also said, I don't anticipate having to do that. The president is fine, but I guess people may have latched onto the first part of that sentence. And so President Trump had to say essentially, how does that joke go? Rumors of my death were greatly exaggerated.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm thinking of watching this. Hey, great stuff. As always, Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Appreciate it, Linda. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Appreciate it. All right, since the outset and the tail end of COVID and during it, when the government money was coming in, it was referred to a lot of people, including me, as, oh, that's COVID money or that's COVID money. Now, technically, you've also heard the acronym ARPA, A-R-P-A, the Federal American Rescue Plan Act, and it was basically to keep many things functioning until we finally shook ourselves of COVID. But now what's happening with that money? A lot of local leaders, including Governor Ned Lamont, say, hey, don't get too used to this. This money is going to run out. Well, now there have been some allegations about this, and we bring on Mark Pazniokas, first time I'm having him on, from the Connecticut Mirror. He's got a great piece that came out the other day, how easy COVID money wet Connecticut lawmakers' appetites for more, and there's a little bit of a burgeoning conflict here involving at least one high-profile lawmaker. Hey, Mark, it's Paul here on WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Mark, great piece of reporting here. I can imagine how long this took you to put together. What made you look into this, Mark? Was it the Doug McCrory thing in particular, or were you kind of keeping an eye on this all along?
No, it was the FBI investigation into Doug McCrory's relationship with some nonprofits in his district, as well as his relationship with a woman who both runs a nonprofit and also is a consultant to others. But so it raised the question of how does this work? And it is something that is very opaque in Connecticut.
Yeah.
As I note in the story, you know, Congress did away with earmarks a while ago, and then they brought them back, but they did so with new rules. And for all of the problems in Congress, I have to say, their system has a greater degree of transparency, that every earmark, or what they call in, in Congress directed, you know, congressionally directed spending. Somebody's name is attached to it. You know, somebody's got to own it. Senator Murphy, Senator Blumenthal, and the members of the House delegation, their names go on a recommendation for funding to programs back home. And that is not the case in Connecticut. It's a very opaque system, and it really involves a legislator being on good terms with his caucus leadership or the top staff.
Yeah, that's one thing I found. The first sort of red light thing in your piece here, Mark, at the Connecticut Mirror was, even initially, it is kind of a gray area how an organization or an advocate, quote unquote, gets their foot in the door spying some of this money being available.
Yes, and, you know, to be fair, a lot of these groups are well-established, and I think most people would agree they're doing good work in their communities. But the issue is, again, why this group, not that one? There's no competitive process. There's no even an application process.
Wow.
The oversight is a little spotty. In most of the programs, they simply write a memo at the end of the year saying this is what we did with the money. But then we have a new source of these earmarks, and which is, you know, why it's with the reference to how their appetites got wet by ARPA, that the Department of Economic and Community Development, the legislature put in a line item. It just says various grants. And in the current two-year budget, that's $39 million over 2 years. And there are really no standards for that. And that is something that has been increasing. It doubled from the previous two-year budget. So, again, it's a system in which, you know, there's very little vetting. You have to have a hook. You know, you can't. It's not like one of the other DECD grant programs, the Community Investment Fund, which is a competition. You file applications.
Sure.
It goes through a pretty rigorous review by DECD staff. And then there is also some fairly strict rules as to how the money can be spent. You know, for example, if it's a project that involves a purchase of land, you have to get multiple appraisals, that kind of thing. You don't see that in this various grants line item. So it does. It invites suspicion or cynicism about how this works.
Mark Pazniokas is the guest for a few more minutes. Great story here, how easy COVID money wet Connecticut lawmakers' appetites for more. So as Mark said, we segued from the COVID money for state money. And Mark, I see this. Now, you mentioned, what, $16 million here in the story? Was that the initial money, or is that now constant?
No, that is the $60 million is a reference to this various grants line item over two biennial budgets. So as I said, so that's why it more than, you know, doubled. And so it's again, that's the piece of it that really there are no standards. Now, there are other grants that are earmarked. The Black and Puerto Rican Caucus has a very unusual arrangement with the leadership in which every member of that caucus gets $150,000 to direct to recipients in their districts. And this is something that's been in place since the Sandy Hook school shooting. This was money. You had urban legislators saying, hey, wait a minute, there's a lot of violence claiming the lives of young people in the cities, but it's, you know, one at a time. It's not the horrific, you know, 20 kids and six educators being killed in Newtown. But that has grown into this annual system that's very unusual. There's no other caucus where everybody gets $150,000 to give out.
Is the part here, Mark, and you've been up there for so many years, maybe you have a better grip on this than I do. Is there a worry that they'd rather have very little oversight versus something that's a little more precise? In other words, is this the kind of thing where, hey, in the grand scheme of things, let's just give out the money. What happens, happens. Because if we invite this in, then we're going to find stuff that maybe we don't want to find. Because I agree with you. I don't quite get the lack of oversight here.
Well, look, there's the numbers are new, but the idea of earmarks has been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Democrats are in control now, so this is really Democratic groups or Democratic legislators who are picking the winners here. But, you know, when Connecticut had divided government, there was certainly Republican input to where this money went. But there is no substitute for a legislator having the ability to say, look, I want, you know, I have a group at home that really needs this money. I want to deliver it. So, I mean, that's the, that's kind of the impulse behind it. That community investment fund I mentioned was a compromise because Governor Lamont was really unwilling to do a lot of bonding, which used to be done in the old days for local capital projects. And the community investment fund was a compromise that there was a process. It wasn't just a single legislator coming forward with a project. A community would have to get behind a project and say, this is a priority. And, you know, most people and, you know, people of both parties plus the governor seem to think that approach has worked well. But this is sort of is blossomed the last two budget cycles. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the coming session because the House Speaker, Matt Ritter, said obviously because of Senator McCrory's difficulty, there'll be a hard look at whether or not they need to have better standards.
Yeah, one would think. And finally, Mark, while we have you here, and you mentioned session, let me ask you something. Do we know any time what they're earmarking for that or pinpointing for the special session on housing? I'm hearing October now. I'm hearing they're going to completely redo the bill or just modify the bill. So if you don't mind just delving into that for a second, what are you hearing on the housing bill?
There's I am told they are making progress to a deal for a bill. We'll see what ultimately is in it, how different it is from the version that was vetoed by the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there is no hard and firm date to do it. And, you know, some of the pressure went away because, you know, the anticipation was they would have to come in and do something to fill some of the gaps opened by federal cuts. Well,
yeah.
Most of the federal cuts that have been done will not take effect until the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a little bit of time to figure out how they're going to respond to cuts, federal cuts for services that are important in Connecticut, including healthcare and nutrition services.
All right. Mark Pasniokas, check him out. Connecticut Mirror. This story, how easy COVID money wet Connecticut lawmakers' appetites for more. And Mark very skillfully outlines what the next chapters of that have been. And he updates the Doug McCrory investigation as well. Mark, thanks. Hope to have you on in the future again. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Mark Pasniokas there from the Connecticut Mirror. Every stinking Tuesday at this time, quarter past the 5 o'clock hour, we turn it to the person who actually watches thousands of hours of CTN, goes through hundreds or thousands of pages of bills, so I don't have to. Megan Portfolio is here with the Yankee Institute. Ms. Portfolio, how are you today?
I'm doing well. That was a great intro. Thank you.
You like that? I work on these things.
I liked it a lot.
You like
oh,
that?
Did you see the new numbers on the merit? You made me think about it.
Oh, my God. No,
that's
it's
going to fix everything. I'm very sarcastic when I have a 4-day work week and now I lost a day of work because I played PlayStation all day yesterday instead of actually like catching up on work.
What PlayStation do you? I have an old. I have like a version.
Oh, I've got the PS5, of course.
Wow. So are you one of the folks? This is something that you may not know about, Megan. We discussed this because one of our video platforms that for some god awful reason you can watch this show on video Megan knew about this platform, right? Twitch, because it's big.
My sister does indie. She does marketing for indie video games, so she has a Twitch channel.
Nice, very nice.
I'm gonna do one. I gotta copyright the name. I'd be like Gaming Granny when I retire. Oh, okay. I have my own Twitch channel.
Nice, nice, very nice. So if you could only play one, before we get into the lousy stuff here, if Megan could only play one video game for the rest of your life, it would be.
Oh, goodness, this is too much pressure. Well, it's going to be Borderlands 4, which will be out in 2 weeks. Yeah. I know that's going to be the game.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Sorry. So you're hardcore. You know when this stuff comes out, what version it is.
I mean, I have told you multiple times I am a nerd.
Well, that's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. And by the way, you're now telling us that for all the time our esteemed lawmakers of both parties spend at the Capitol, not a whole lot gets done. So what have you found out?
I mean, this is a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
So, it actually reminded me on how much stinking reading I do during session.
Okay.
So, organization called Fiscal Note, they do like software that does bill tracking.
Mm-hmm.
They put out a report that analyzed every state legislature, how many bills they put out, and then ranked them. Well, Connecticut, with our like barely 3.6 million people,
mm-hmm.
put in 4,064 bills last year.
God.
Eighth most in the country. Okay, eighth most.
I want to make sure people hear that. So our legislators, now some mm-hmm. bills we know are necessary and get passed.
Correct.
But they, in some way, shape, or form, submitted 4,000 bills?
4,064, and it was the eighth highest. And guess how many? Well, you read the article. However, I'm going to spoiler alert everyone.
Okay.
Only 232 of those pills passed, and that equals 5.7%.
Oh, man.
And now I'll put it in perspective now. Yeah. The most bills came out of New York. They've got about, you know, a little bit less than 20 million people.
Yeah.
They pumped out almost 19,000 bills.
Yeah.
But they managed to get 12% passed. And then I'm going to say the worst, but really the best was Colorado, which, by the way, also has a Democrat governor and a Democrat House and Senate.
Yeah.
They only put in like 730 bills. 730.
But I don't.
They have double the people.
So our number was what? How many bills were submitted?
So we did 4,064.
On what? 4,000 bills? On look, I know some of it is, you know, what's the official blade grass color of Connecticut or something like that. I get that. But 4,000 bills on what?
All sorts of things. You can get, I mean, we have, because we like to virtue signal here in Connecticut. So all of these lawmakers that I'm going to put, they know they won't go anywhere.
Yes.
So what this essentially does, all right, now I'm going to get like a little serious. And actually, this is where it actually triggered me.
Go ahead.
So think about it. Think about the resources we're tying up. This is a tax. This is a hidden tax on civic participation. Because I remember when I was a civilian before I worked at Yankee, I would follow the government. And do you know how hard it is with a full-time job to monitor 4,000 bills? Do you know how stressful? My parents own a small business.
Yeah.
Do you know how stressful it is for my dad when he keeps hearing all these bills that aren't even going to go anywhere? He keeps making decisions based on, you know, how many employees do I hire? How much inventory do I take in? And he's seeing all of these really terrible, like paying striking workers,
mm-hmm.
all of these bills that are never going to go anywhere. You're forcing people into this position where they like throw their hands up. And this is why we don't have a lot of participation. People throw their hands up in the air and like, what the heck? I can't follow all this nonsense.
I mean, I am. And look, I follow this stuff as closely as the next guy because of the business I'm in. If you had asked me, even knowing that some of these bills are like vanity projects, like, hey, I care about your group or your cause, I'll put a bill in, I would have guessed, honestly, 1,000, maybe 1,500. That would have been my tops. 4,000.
You know, we don't need, like, they're not mommy and daddy. Like, I have a mom and dad.
Yeah.
They raised me. I moved out. I moved on. And now I'm my own person.
Yeah.
I don't need my government being my mommy and daddy. And they put all these, I mean, it's just 4,000 bills, Paul. It's insane.
And yet the stuff that really matters, right, like housing.
Energy.
Like energy. Like the budget is left for what? Oh, the clock's ticking. 2 days left. Yeah,
Like, you could have cut this in half, and really, if you really are serious about housing, you're wasting, you're tying up so many resources. You're tying up the legal people. You're tying up, you know, fiscal analysis people, the people that actually analyze the bill, which meanwhile, all of that information doesn't even come out until the end of session, like how much these bills cost. They really need to, like, do that, you know, beforehand so we kind of know what's going on. It's, like, so hard to participate in this state government when they don't, when they're just so unserious about things. Like, there were, I think, two or three bills for striking workers. I get it. You want to get striking workers paid. Do you need three bills? No, you don't. One of the bills was actually like, it's, you know, when they play their little games, like, oh, we're going to put it in with this, like, bill against Amazon and regulating how warehouses, we're going to put it in there because that's a little more palatable. Then maybe we can sneak it in. No, you don't, like, do bills that are germane to the subject.
Yeah.
Senator Rob Sampson talks about this all the time. He gets up and he's like, this is not even germane to the title. Like, you have this title and then the language, once you eventually fill it in, it has nothing to do with the title.
And this housing
bill. This is why we run into all of these rats and these omnibus crap.
And this housing bill, you and I are reminded that this started with like a very simple bill for a working group. And now we're, and good Lord, won't it be great if Lamont vetoes this again to see the heads cracking? It would be spiritual. God, I hope he does.
I mean, if they're going to put out the same bill, I mean, it would make him look quite foolish if he didn't veto it. and especially if he's running for governor again.
Yeah.
I mean, and do we really need to have a special session for that? There was nothing in that bill that if they passed it today is going to change the housing market by the time session starts. Like, I mean, I wish they would take the process a little more seriously, especially on the Senate side. I mean, at least on the House side, before they go in and debate those, they at least let us know. They'll have a press conference.
Yeah.
And, all right, guys, this is what we're going to do today. The Senate, it's a whole mystery. I've talked about this on your show before.
Yeah.
Because I think that is the most annoying thing to me. Like, how can you just tell us what you say? Like, I'm not going to hold you to it. You don't get to it. That's fine. You're not going to get punished. But can you let me know what's happening? It's just, they don't take the people seriously. They treat it like this big old game. And then they get nothing done.
That's it. All right. You feel better now, don't you? I can tell.
I do. I'm about to go do CrossFit, so I'm going to definitely feel better.
Okay. Megan Portfolio, check it out. Hartford Portfolio at the Yankee Institute. Megan, as always, be safe, drive safely, say hi to the dog, and we'll chat next week.
Bye, Paul.
Okay, there you go. Megan Portfolio, check it out.